Funding for this podcast comes from MathWorks, creators of MATLAB and Simulink software, accelerating the pace of engineering and science. Learn more at MathWorks.com.
Welcome back to Radio Boston. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. Racism in Boston. We've talked about it often on the show, especially following high-profile incidents like those racist taunts that were hurled at black baseball players at Fenway Park or allegations of patterns of racism in some of Boston's most prestigious schools. But what about the smaller daily acts of racism that might happen on the city's streets, like the N-word being hurled at a passerby? What does that say about race and the city? Well, we're going to talk about that for the rest of today's show, and we want to hear from you. So call 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Now, recently, WBO reporter Simone Rios actually caught one of those moments on tape, and Simone's with us now. Hi there.
Hey, Meghna.
Well, first of all, tell us, what was the genesis of this story?
So I was interviewing Reverend Laura Everett of the Mass Council of Churches. I'm doing a story about her. She recently wrote a book about the spirituality of biking. Mm. So I was interviewing Reverend Everett in the Back Bay, and through my headphones, I hear this racial slur, and everybody sort of looks at each other in disbelief. It was not related to the interview we were doing. It sort of became a part of the interview, but then it became a story of its own.
Some other person just right across the street.
That's right. I sort of had a sense of disbelief. Did that just happen? And Laura Everett turns to a young white man who was standing at the corner that we were at, and they both sort of said the same thing. Did that just happen? Did that just happen? Nobody could really believe it. On my way back to the newsroom on the train, I realized I had some tape here that we could possibly do something with. I went back and listened to it. Indeed, it was there.
Yeah.
And it raises an interesting question for journalists. If you catch a racial slur on tape, does it rise to the occasion of news? And we had a long conversation about it here at WBUR and decided that, indeed, we should do something with it and put it into the broader context of the discussion of racism in Boston today.
Well, Simone, let's hear this piece. But before we do, I just want to warn listeners that, okay, this is a story about racism and about the use of the N-word on the streets of Boston. So it's central. The N-word is sadly central to the story you're about to hear. We didn't actually bleep all the occurrences of this word in the story. So you're going to hear it unbleeped in the first 15 seconds or so of the piece. And when we come back, we're going to talk about why we chose to do that with Simone in just a couple of minutes. But here's Simone's story.
A few weeks ago, I was interviewing a pastor named Laura Everett at an intersection where a bicyclist was recently hit and killed. In the background, you hear a pedestrian yelling at another pedestrian using the N-word.
Rick was a cyclist.
Reverend Everett and a young man standing at the corner look at each other in disbelief.
Did that happen?
Did that just happen?
Yeah. If you ever need an example of human sinfulness, just look at the roads, right? We're so cruel to one another.
Everyone never seen that happen before.
Yeah.
When I grew up in South Carolina, you see something that's so hateful, and you can't even rationalize that it just happened.
Everett crosses Commonwealth Avenue to catch up with the black man.
Thought I'd ask, see how he was doing, see if he heard it too. I don't see him anymore.
We finished our interview and I returned to the newsroom, wondering what to do with the recording. We decided to report it in a story, given the number of racial incidents in Boston of late and the city's long and complex legacy of race relations. That legacy got some national attention earlier this year. Saturday Night Live's Michael Che called out the city before the New England Patriots played the Atlanta Falcons in the Super Bowl.
For 3 hours, I just don't want to talk about any social issues or politics. I just want to relax, turn my brain off, and watch the blackest city in America beat the most racist city I've ever been to.
And a few months later, Baltimore Orioles center fielder Adam Jones reported that someone at Fenway Park called him the N-word. The mayor and the governor and the president of the Red Sox all spoke out against the racist language. And the next night, fans greeted Jones in a fashion rare for an opposing player.
He's getting a standing O now.
A sizable percentage of the Fenway fans coming to their feet to acknowledge Jones, not as a visiting player, but as a human being who should not have had to hear what he heard last night.
Harvard Law professor Randall Kennedy wrote a book about the N-word, the word referred to as the atomic bomb of racial slurs.
Not only is it used in that way, was it used, you know, 33 years ago, but is it used in that way today? Sure it is.
Kennedy says the current political climate has created a sense that bigotry can be okay.
I think there's some people who are saying, oh, this is great. I can now come forward and say things that before I didn't think that I could safely say.
And the data back that up. The Anti-Defamation League of New England has reported an increase in anti-Semitic and other hate incidents in the state since the election of Donald Trump. And the state attorney general's office says it's received 10 reports of the N-word being used over the same period. Kennedy says he's heard the word used hatefully just a few times over his 3 decades in the city. He stresses that people who spew racial epithets are not characteristic of the Boston he knows.
What's characteristic of Boston are the people who say, we don't like that, and we are going to further marginalize racism wherever it pops up.
But what's characteristic isn't always what makes the news. What does is when a school punishes 2 black girls for wearing hair braid extensions. That's what happened recently at the Mystic Valley Regional Charter School in Malden. The school's board of trustees met to suspend the hair policy 2 days after the attorney general denounced it for singling out students of color. Rasan Hall is one of the people who came out to show solidarity with the girls in Malden. He's director of the Racial Justice Program for the ACLU of Massachusetts. I asked him to contrast Boston against other parts of the country.
We can't necessarily compare whether or not people are calling black folks the N-word more so here than in New Jersey or in Detroit or somewhere in the deep south. But what I do know is that the structural disparities that exist in Massachusetts are worse than some of the national disparities.
Hall points to studies that show African Americans in Massachusetts fare worse than the rest of the country in the economy, the schools, and the prisons. Nationwide, blacks are nearly 6 times more likely than whites to be incarcerated. In Massachusetts, they're almost 8 times more likely.
To me, that says that Boston and Massachusetts has more significant problems with race than other places in the country.
Hall is talking about structural racism, the idea that society is structured in a way that discriminates against minorities. So, is there a connection between structural racism and the kind of racism where a white man feels free to shout the N-word at a black man? For Rasan Hall, the answer is yes. He says acts of individual racism are supported and inspired by structural racism.
It's easy to point out the person that's obviously doing racist things. It's harder to have a conversation about the people who are maintaining systems of oppression. And until we get to that and start teasing that apart, there's really not going to be any substantive change.
2 weeks after my interview with Reverend Laura Everett, I visited her in her office on Beacon Hill. She says she's thought a lot about how she reacted on the street.
I was caught off guard, but that's not a sufficient excuse either.
Everett turns the pages of an old Bible for guidance.
The sort of ultimate story of that Christians point to is about the Good Samaritan, about how to be a good neighbor. And so as a bystander, where was I in that? Why did I not go after the guy who said this and say, hey, you can't just walk across the street and use that word to someone? Why did I not intervene?
Everett says she's now looking for appropriate ways to respond. And law professor Randall Kennedy has some thoughts.
If someone was to say, for instance, that's a terrible thing to say, shame on you. Seems to me that that would be a nice response.
Kennedy says it's also important to approach the person who's been maligned. Bear witness, he says. Tell the person you saw what happened. Express sympathy and make it clear you're not okay with it.
That report from WBUR's Simone Rios. Now, again, Simone's report began as something completely unrelated to race, but he caught that really disturbing incident of the N-word being hurled at a stranger on the street in Back Bay. And he wanted to put that in the bigger context of the ongoing conversations we're having about race in the city of Boston. And I'm adding to that this question. What are these little or smaller daily acts of racism that are that we and our neighbors might be experiencing? What does that say about race and structural racism in Greater Boston? And we'd love to hear from you. Has this happened to you? Have you witnessed it? How do you react to it? What do you think that says about race in Boston? Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. Well, joining us now to discuss this more is Mariama White-Hammond. She's a minister at Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain. Reverend Hammond, it's great to have you back.
Thank you.
Also with us is Michael Curry. He's former president of the Boston branch of the NAACP. Michael, it's great to have you back as well.
Thanks for having me.
Well, first of all, let me just ask both of you, give us a reality check here. Has this kind of thing ever happened to you, Reverend White-Hammond?
A few times in my life. It's not like the kind of thing that happens all the time, but yeah, it has happened. So I'm not saying that I'm okay with it, but I'm not maybe as shocked as folks are. I've seen it happen to me. I've seen it happen to other people. Yeah.
Yeah. So, I mean, the sense of shock maybe amongst listeners who are not people of color is part of the story here, I think, which we're going to discuss in a second. But Michael, let me turn to you. I mean, have you been the target of sort of a daily act of racism, for lack of a better term?
Yeah. I mean, ultimately, when you have a broader understanding of racism, what racism is, you're not looking for the more blatant, obvious examples. I think once we get an understanding, and we haven't had that conversation as a community, but as an individual, I've experienced it. And even more recently, in the wake of the election of President Trump, oddly enough, twice within a week, once on Sterl Drive, where a white gentleman who I had pulled in front of pulled up next to me and called me a black SOB. And at a gas station in Brockton, where a gentleman who was very drunk, maybe on drugs, got out and called me and the other African-Americans there at the gas station ends. So I think it's emboldened some people to think that they can do that in the time of Donald Trump's presidency.
You know, one of the things that I found most disturbing about Simone's story and what he caught on tape was there was another witness that was at the scene with him who said that they're originally from South Carolina and they haven't heard something like this on the streets of the city in South Carolina that they're from. I mean, Reverend White-Hammond, what does that tell you?
I mean, I think this again is you know, alluding to what Michael was saying, is, you know, racism is a chronic problem. It's the kind of thing that exists at multiple levels, and if you're not dealing with it, it's creeping back in many different ways. I was joking earlier. I'm trying to lose weight. I'm the kind of person that I'm pretty much, if I'm not watching what I'm eating, then I'm gaining weight. I'm going in the wrong direction. And the same thing is true with racism. If you're not paying attention to it and working on it, then it's probably going in the wrong direction.
So here's what I want to ask both of you. I mean, I think this is a perfect segue to what I really want to get to. And that is, you know, part of the thing that we in the station have been struggling with for a while was this question of whether or not to actually air that piece of tape that had the N-word unbleeped. And as you noted, it wasn't bleeped. Because we just want, which is something we usually would do, but it was so central to the moment that we felt like it was important for listeners to honestly hear what happened. But the fact that it's so shocking still to a lot of folks, I'm wondering if that is actually part of the problem, that if we're going to try and tackle structural racism in Boston, we got to get over the shock. Because if you're shocked, it means that you don't know that it's there all the time.
Yeah. Well, I think, I mean, so the reality is, like, everybody's carrying a camera around in their pocket. Police brutality and police killings have not gone up recently. Our awareness of them has gone up because now people are able to videotape what's happening. And something that we would talk about even casually at Thanksgiving dinner, it was a common knowledge in the black community, is now becoming a much more common knowledge in the rest of America because people can see it with their own eyes. And in this case, they can hear it with their own ears.
Michael, I mean, forgive me, I'm just going to be blunt. Do you ever want to tell the white, your white colleagues, white friends, get over your shock?
Yeah. Well, you know, it's funny. I try to find a way to say that to them. I think the most liberal and open-minded among them would like to believe that we're in a different place. And that's the challenge for those of us. I always make the comparison to the movie Sixth Sense when the little white kid says, "I see dead people," right? Is that if you understand what racism is and you're conscious of it, you see it everywhere. You see it in who's not hired, who's fired, who's dying early, suffering longer, who gets called the N-word, and you go down the list. But I think most Bostonians, most folks in Massachusetts, and many Americans who are not people of color, and some people of color, want to bury their heads in the sand and just pretend it's not here, and therefore they're contributing to the problem. And that's the challenge. So I do want to tell folks to get over themselves and to focus on, as Reverend Hammond said, if we don't pay attention to it, then it's growing. It's in all aspects of our lives.
Well, we are talking about race and racism in Boston. And what kind of window, maybe, I don't even want to say smaller, because to me it still feels like a profound act of racism, but more sort of quotidian things like the hurling of the N-word at strangers on the street, might say about race and how we think about it and talk about it and experience it in Boston. And we'd love to hear from you. Call us at 1-800-423-8255. That's 800-423-TALK. I'm joined in the studio by Reverend Mariana White Hammond, and you're also hearing Michael Curry as well. Let's go to the phones. Colette is calling from downtown Boston. You're on the air, Colette.
Hi, Meghna. It's Colette, and I want to just say that I certainly agree with Michael, but I don't think that Boston, race in Boston, is any worse than it is anywhere else. I think we have a higher standard for Boston because Boston is the cradle of liberty. It's the birthplace of America. It's where the abolitionists were. There were so many positive things that have happened over the years with race in Boston. So when something happens here around race, we sort of make a bigger deal of it. I think what we should focus on are who are the people in Boston who are paying attention. There are business leaders like Jim Rooney at the Chamber and Bob Rivers at Eastern Bank and Sam Kennedy who at the Red Sox who moved to very quickly. So let's look at the good things that are going on. I think these race dialogues, to Reverend Hammond and to Mike's point, are good for Boston. It's what happened in South Africa when they had the Truth and Reconciliation.
Yeah.
When people are able to give voice to their pain and to have others listen with empathy and understanding and compassion.
Well, Colette, Colette, I'm sorry to cut you off, but that's Colette Phillips as well, I should note. Thank you so much for calling. Reverend White Hammond, your thoughts about that?
So, yeah, I agree. I mean, I do think that I've been a lot of places in this country and I've been a few places in the world. I don't think that Boston is overwhelmingly worse than every place else. I think America has a problem with race. I think the world's got some issues in terms of ways that we create division and how we use them to treat each other unjustly. That being said, I mean, I do think that there is some work that has been done, but I still think the truth is we are an overwhelmingly segregated community. And I think that's unacceptable. And I think I work a lot with young people. Their vision of how it should be and how it is, there's a big difference. And I do agree. I think that Boston holds itself to a higher standard, and it should. Mm-hmm. We have the resources, and you know, we have some of, in theory, the top minds. We have financial resources. We should be leading on this issue. So I'm not sure I agree that we're not the worst place in America. I think that, you know, I'm sure that gets a laugh. I'm not sure that that's necessarily true. But that being said, we should set a high standard for ourselves. And when you look at where I think we should be, we aren't there.
Let me get a couple more calls in if I can. Bishop is calling from Somerville. You're on the air.
Hi. I just called because there was a caller who said that he didn't feel like the level of racism in Boston was as high or as prevalent as in other cities. And I'm from here, and I completely disagree with that perspective. I came from a family of really, really angry relatives who would talk about busing, who would talk about going to South Boston getting beat up. And I really didn't want to grow up to be angry like my relatives, but now I'm in my mid-30s and I'm really, really very angry, and I have a tough time being hired. I talk with my Black friends at Harvard, and they feel, some of them feel very marginalized, and it's really difficult being Black in Boston. And I talked to my friends in different cities. Some of them have moved here, and then they left as fast as they could. It's really, really challenging.
Bishop, thank you so much for calling and for sharing your perspective. Michael Curry, respond to what Bishop is saying. I mean, she's talking about people leaving because of the climate.
Yeah, I appreciate her comment. I think it's a distraction, quite frankly. You know, we coined a phrase when I was in college, because the college I went to claimed to be more diverse than others, though we had a ridiculously low number. We said we were the best of the worst, right? So sometimes you claim this courage, this pride in not being as bad as other cities. And you know, Colette Phillips does an amazing job with supporting diversity in this city, and she mentioned folks who are contributing to it. But the reality is this: who knows if we're the worst? Because quite frankly, as Attorney Rahsaan Hall says often and in the piece, unless we have a racism indicator that goes down how we're dealing with incarceration and housing and education and health care, we might do that analysis and find out we are the worst.
Mm.
Because I'm not looking for the N-word or someone being dragged from behind a truck. Those are the blatant things, right? We're looking for how does racism manifest itself and how people are living, the wealth gap.
Mm-hmm.
And we haven't had that sort of analysis of where we are as a city. And we tend to gravitate to these extreme examples, overt examples of racism, when in fact racism is much more ubiquitous and pervasive than that.
Absolutely. I agree, Michael, completely. But I also, I wonder if there is some sort of line to be drawn between these, you know, the N-word being used on the streets of Boston and the deeper structural issues that both you and Reverend White Hammond are talking about.
I mean, I do think there's a connection. Here's what I think you're hearing from Mike, from myself. When somebody comes at you and just calls you out of your name, I'm not saying it's not disturbing, but at the end of the day, you're very clear who they are. What's much harder is that you walk into a room and you feel a certain kind of hostility. Or, for instance, what people will say to me, oh, my gosh, you're so well spoken. Huh. I mean, was I supposed to? I'm a preacher. That's what I do for my job. Of course, I'm well spoken. That's what I'm supposed to. So there's lots of things I think that happen that are actually the smaller things are actually more frustrating, because when someone calls you the N-word, you can name it. You can put it out there, and people will rally around you. But when you think somebody actually thinks you're incompetent and it affects you every single day, sometimes actually that's more frustrating than the blatant things.
Yeah. Well, you know, every time we get into this conversation, I feel like we've only begun and the time runs out, but we will keep having this conversation. Reverend Mariama White Hammond, minister at Bethel AME Church in Jamaica Plain, thank you as always for coming in.
Thank you.
And Michael Curry, former president of the Boston NAACP. Michael, it is always great to have you. Thank you as well.
Thank you.
And listeners, go to our website, radioboston.org, and leave us your comments about what you think about race and racism in Boston. And I promise you, we will continue to talk about it on this show as much as we can. That's it for today. I'm Meghna Chakrabarty. This is Radio Boston. Mm-hmm.